ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 So continuing with text one. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. It's in the purport. The real atonement involves coming to real knowledge, and for this there is a standard process. When one follows a regulated hygienic process, he does not fall sick. A human being is meant to be trained according to certain principles to revive his original knowledge. Such a methodical life is described as tapasya. One can be gradually elevated to the standard of real knowledge or Krishna consciousness by practicing austerity and celibacy, brahmacharya, by controlling the mind, by controlling the senses, by giving up one's possessions and charity, by being avowedly truthful, by keeping clean, and by practicing yoga asanas. However, if one is fortunate enough to get the association of pure devotees, he can easily surpass all the practices for controlling the mind by the mystic yoga process, simply by following the regulated principles of Krishna consciousness, refraining from illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, and by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master. The easy process is being recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami. So here he's pointing out that the in the processes of elevation, then one can use the mechanical systems, and depending upon those, then one can advance. So this is here the celibacy, austerity, controlling the senses, giving everything up in charity, truthfulness, all these aspects. And by that, one can elevate yourself. By performing those, then the mind will become purified. One will be elevated. The mind will be improved. One's lifestyle will be brought to goodness. But it is very difficult because you're performing this by, you have to have already piety to do this. That's the only slight setback that is not so much mentioned. It means people who are impious, they will not be able to do this. They won't have the determination to perform these activities. They won't be able to be celibate, to be, give things away in charity. They won't be able to do it. So, especially in this age, then that makes it very difficult. It means you have to be, it's like how you say, there's a saying, money brings money. You have money, you invest that, you can get more money. You have no money, you can't start. So then, same way, you have piety, then you can create more piety. So based on the piety you have the determination to do those activities to create more piety. So then, though this is a nice way to do it by the yoga process, but the difficulty in this age might not be so easy. And this is a very lengthy process, very drawn out, very difficult. So then, Srila Rupa Prabhupada is pointing out that Rupa Goswami then says that you just go beyond this. You take up Krishna consciousness and you follow the regulated principles of Krishna consciousness, following the four regulated principles, engaging in all the devotional activities. And then we see that we will get the same result and beyond. We will go beyond the mode of goodness. We will come to the transcendental platform. So this we see is that how this works, why this would work, is because originally there is Krishna consciousness. Originally there's Krishna consciousness. And that Krishna consciousness, that is the standard of the position of the soul. Then from that, the soul has come to the material world. So you have to have some systems by which the living entity can improve themselves and come to that position. So then you have the direct methods or the Krishna conscious methods. And then for those who are not interested actually in Krishna consciousness, they're quite happy with the offerings of this material world, or the offerings that seem to be out of this material world, like the yoga process or the path of the impersonal process. But they're still material. They're still connected in the material world. So therefore, one engages in those to keep oneself busy and to improve one's position. But the principles on which the yoga system, karma, jnana, and yoga are based are actually Krishna conscious principles. But they are presented in such a way that you don't realize that. Because otherwise one wouldn't do that. One wouldn't do that. So just like I remember once we were preaching in the temple in America to someone, like at the Sunday program, and so many people are coming. And then we were explaining to this one group of people that in the spiritual world there's no lust. And the persons were shocked. They said, "No lust?" He says, "Yeah, no lust." It's transcendental. He says, "No lust." He says, "Well, we wouldn't want to go there." So therefore, there's people who would be interested in some kind of improvement in their lives, some kind of elevation, but they don't want to give up all their material attachments and all these things. Therefore, then the Vedic literature then tells them how they can, yes, you can cultivate this lust, but in a regulated way so that you are purified. And so then the processes of karma and jnana and yoga are given for such people. But the principle, the basic foundation of these is Krishna conscious principles. So if you follow the Krishna consciousness, then automatically the other things are there. They are already given. We're already, getting up in the morning, taking our bath, putting tilak, doing all these different activities. That these are the essence of the whole, anything that there is to be offered in the Vedic culture. There's not more than this in principle. There may be some different details. Someone may put this kind of tilak, someone puts that kind of tilak, someone takes the bath in this way or in that way, puts on this kind of cloth or that kind of cloth. But otherwise, the principle is the same. There's nothing lost. But the difference is the other is it is being done for the purpose of simply improving one's material position, while Krishna consciousness is being done to please Krishna. Therefore, there's not a separate need of a separate endeavor. There's not a separate need. So that is what Rupa Goswami is pointing out. So if we just understand that, we move from... In other words, this point is being made for those who have faith and piety. Like that. That is one thing that we will note, is that many times there are points made and we wonder why they're bothering making these things. Because there is such thing, or at least there used to be such thing, as people who were pious and were attached to the path of piety. They would think, if I give up all the little details of the path of piety, then there will be misfortune. So Rupa Goswami is pointing out, no, if you give those up but you're following the original path of piety, the eternal path of piety, then whatever benefits are to be gained will be gained. But your purpose is to go back to Godhead, not to enjoy in this world. So that is why we will see these. At the same time, as we've seen many times, is in our own lives, the devotees are needing, some social, economic, emotional exchanges. So those are to be found within the spheres of these things. So then we can understand that materially we may benefit from them, but unless we connect them to Krishna, then spiritually we won't benefit from them. And we don't have to really worry, because it goes back to the same point again. Unless you're already pious, you can't follow the path of piety anyway. So one doesn't have to worry about that. So we are able to follow the path of piety because of Krishna consciousness. By that we're situated. Is that... Does that make some sense? It means if you're pious, then you can build on that and create more piety. If you're not pious, then you won't be able to follow that path. But by Krishna consciousness, that itself, because you're working now on the spiritual platform, that will create the determination and all these things, that we will perform the necessary spiritual activities. Those spiritual activities, many of them, look the same as the mundane pious activities. But they're not the same, because they're being done to please Krishna. So then it creates a different result. The result means you become Krishna conscious. Though, at the same time, one's material needs will be taken care of. Like that. Is that... In other words, the whole idea is we should have faith that whatever we want in life can be gained through the Krishna conscious process. That is the point. It's not that there's some other supplement needed. Krishna consciousness can provide everything. But it's just a matter of understanding how to connect everything that we need and want to Krishna consciousness. That's the science. Yes?
How do you come to Krishna consciousness if you don't have piety? I mean, how far back we have to go and link all this piety situation or karma situation? Many will never walk in this state.
Well, here we're talking about two kinds of piety. There's spiritual piety and there's the material piety. So I'm saying to do material pious activities generally requires some piety. That's why these paths take sometimes millions of lifetimes to develop, because you don't have much, but you desire it. And so by that desire, then the next life, then there's some facility to do. And then from there, it gradually, till you become, you know, these great pious kings who, you know, do so much great, amazing, you know, things and elevate themselves to the heavenly planets and do great yajnas and give everything in charity and like this. So that's the development of, you know, millions of lifetimes. So that's one thing. So I'm saying is that to be able to perform, to be able to be austere, celibate, control the mind, the senses, giving up one's possessions and charity and all that. You generally see as pious people can do that. Impious don't find the ability to do that. So that's the material platform. So since in this age there's not an alternative, how you'll elevate ourselves, because not so many people have the piety to improve themselves through that pious method. And it also has its limit. It's a slow path, and it has its limit. Maximum it can give you is the top levels of material existence. So then the idea is that then by Krishna consciousness, one can cross beyond that. And in one life, one can create the situation that you can go back to Godhead. So that is there. So we're switching paths from the slow path to the quick path. The slow path means by the modes of nature what we've done, we move along on that. And that will take us step by step through the process of karma, jnana, and yoga. But the Krishna consciousness then is the quick path, because then you are directly dealing with the platform of the soul. The others don't fully address the platform of the soul. It means even the path of jnana, karma has to acknowledge that the soul exists, otherwise how you'll get your results in the future. You have to have faith that the soul is eternal, to have faith to be pious now and go to the heavenly planets. And for jnana, then naturally it's on the platform of the soul. But they're only acknowledging the eternal aspect of the soul. They're not actually acknowledging the aspect of knowledge and bliss. So Satchitananda, they're only taking one out of three. And the yogis, then they'll acknowledge that the Lord exists, but there's not an eternal relationship with Him. That the soul is Brahman, the Lord is there, He has a form, but we merge into that form. So then there is no relationship. So that's also then not acknowledging that the soul has the element of happiness. Because merging will not create happiness, because happiness comes from exchange. So, therefore, these platforms are still considered material. They're still considered a material platform. Though they're dealing with transcendence, but their result ultimately is actually material, because it doesn't get one to the spiritual world where there's spiritual rasa and spiritual relationship. So, the quick path, then we go directly to that the soul is eternal and has a relation. God is eternal. We have an eternal relationship with Him. So on that platform, then the soul, then one is able to cross over all these other things very, very quickly, because all these other things are founded on the idea that I myself am going to, you know, in some way enjoy this material world. I'm going to be happy here, either by accepting being attached to it or by being repulsed by it. One of these two, I will gain some happiness out of this place. So when you go to the point where I understand I won't get any happiness from this place, that I will only get happiness by engaging in the Lord's service in the spiritual realm, on the spiritual platform, then that changes the whole picture. So then one doesn't have faith in the material processes. One has faith in Krishna consciousness. So, since we are in the world is created by Krishna, our body is material, our subtle body is material, we have to work within the material sphere. So, we want to engage and offer of the material sphere what is the best for Krishna. You know, if we go to the market, we'll buy the best fruits and vegetables and grains and spices. We won't buy inferior quality. So in the same way, it's then on the subtler platforms, then the processes of interaction and exchange between persons, we'll use those that are in the platform of goodness, because those are the best. So we'll use the principles of duty and charity and all these things, the same things. But now we're using them to please Krishna, not to please ourselves or to establish ourselves as a very pious, or establish ourselves in the heavenly planets or the Brahman or with mystic cities. So even though it may look similar, it's not. So it's a different class of piety. So to take up Krishna consciousness actually has nothing to do with the material platform. It's not how pious you are, how much material knowledge you have, or how much you're accomplished in the yoga system that brings one to Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness one comes to by unknown devotional activities. You know, hearing the Hari Nam, taking some prasad, seeing the Rath Yatra, like this. These kind of things that you don't know that they're spiritual, you don't really know what they are. And by that, when that increases enough, then we start getting faith in the association of devotees. And then when we actually have faith in the association of devotees, then we can take up the Krishna conscious process directly. Otherwise, before that, it's just the Gyata Sukriti. It's devotional, but it's unknown. So the benefit of it, it will bring you to taking up known devotional service. Like let's say some bum comes in, takes prasad, then it's not that from that he'll just go back to Godhead. But he will then get the opportunity to come in contact with Krishna consciousness again. And then by that, depending upon, you know, the sincerity, then either sooner or later, then they will start to wonder what's going on here. Like you go into the restaurant there, the whatever. There's so much information and so many things that could awaken Krishna consciousness. But many people just come in and eat and go. It's nice food, it's cheap, you know, it's not a bad atmosphere, so it's convenient, so they come. But one day then they'll wonder, why is this, what's going on, something will happen, and then that will bring them in contact, when that's increased enough. So when we talk about pious activities bringing us to Krishna consciousness, it's not material piety, it's spiritual piety. And that is created by the devotees. We haven't created it ourselves. The devotees created the situations in which we can come in contact with Krishna consciousness. Yeah, it's Krishna's mercy. That's why it's called causeless mercy. It's for us, there's no cause for it. We haven't done anything to deserve it. But just because of the Lord's desire, the devotees make the arrangement, and then people come in contact with it. So there will be some people are coming in contact with it because previously they have come in contact. But there are some people they have not come in contact, so therefore then they are starting. But someone who comes in and takes up and surrenders and becomes a devotee, it's because they have done these things before. It wasn't just they were walking along down the street, never done anything connected with devotional service. Just see Hare Krishna Center, walk in, you know, what's going on here, someone explains, and they just surrender on the spot. You know, they've done something before, like that.
Could you call that piety?
It's called piety, but it's a different kind of piety. It's bhakti sukriti. So you have karma sukriti, Jnana Sukriti and Bhakti Sukriti, is that you'll see, like in India, you see it very much in the very various communities. There are some communities, let's say like in South India, where there's Jnana Sukriti is very high. You can go there and sit down and give a lecture for hours, and the people, all, you know, men, women, children, everybody, they sit there and listen. They ask very intelligent questions, and that they have Jnana Sukriti. You go to, but yeah, then you go, let's say, to, you know, especially like northwestern India. There you see a lot more Karma Sukriti. Is that you come to them, explain your projects, and they're willing to give money and different services like that. But they don't necessarily become devotees themselves like that, but they'll support devotional service like that. And then you have, like in Bengal, there is the, you know, lectures and that, if it's philosophical, is not so attractive to them. And money giving, they don't necessarily have so much money to give. But when it comes to devotional activities, those will just do. So there you see the Bhakti Sukriti is more prominent. Because it's Lord Chaitanya's place, and so much of this Sankirtan has been going on for the last hundreds of years, so many people have been exposed to this, and so it's just more natural for them. You know, while north you see the more charity and all this is very much their interest. While in the south, hearing, you know, about, you know, technical, spiritual, you know, Upanishads and Vedanta and all this is more their interest. So they've done that, so then they can do more of it. So they have the Sukriti to do it. Does that make some sense? So they're all pious activities, like that. But two of them, Jnana and Karma, are mundane. But the Bhakti is spiritual. Like that. Well, if we desire, then Krishna will put us in contact.
Why do you desire?
Just, that one cannot say. It was just one gets tired of the material world. One looks for but you don't know what that alternative is, because we don't have experience. So simply, we are looking for an alternative. That's enough. So that will put us in contact.
Could we say this is an evolutionary process? It has been going on since time immemorial, and now we have reached a certain stage where we are going to become Krishna conscious by our evolutions, which have.
Basically, but still the desire is there. It's just like you may have the facility. Let's say like the son in the family, he has the facility to take advantage of the facilities of the house, but they don't. They play, they're out with their friends, they do all that. So when they'll get serious and actually take it up, you don't know. Even though it's there. Before they're born, already the facility is there. You know, a wealthy person, they have the business, they have all these things. The son, automatically, he's part of the business, and it'll be his. But when he takes it up, you don't know. You see 12-year-olds are very, very much, you know, any free time, they're sitting in the shop and they're, you know, and bargaining, and they're very good at it. And others, they just spend their time going through school, and they may be much later before they ever decide to get serious. So that, still, it depends upon the individual's desire. So you have these combinations of when they desire to get out of the material world, and that combination of that they have, by the grace of the devotees, been engaged in so much Agyata Sukriti. So that combination then creates the opportunity.
It's not when they come to this awakening, it is why they come to this awakening, that's the question.
Yeah. So they come because they're looking for something else. You know, that they could turn to Krishna consciousness is because it's been done before. But when they'll decide to come to it, then generally there's three reasons why. One is that lack of money. Two is anxiety, and three is interest in knowledge. You know, what is God? What is this? What is that? You know, some interest. What is this Eastern, you know, religious? You know, there's some interest like that. And a few actually want to know God. Like that, you know, specifically. It's not just a body of knowledge, but they specifically want to know and serve God. So a few are like that. But the idea is very quickly the other three will become like that. They may have come for these other reasons, but within a short time, by association of devotees, they will take up being interested in understanding and pleasing God. So that, you know, that's the next step. It's a natural step.
The real question is of free will. How much free will is involved in this whole process of evolution?
Yeah, it means free will is there. It's completely there. Means the people in Perth, you know, they didn't ask you to come and do a Harinam down their street. So they're just, you know, doing whatever they're doing, and we're doing what we're doing. But it has effect on them. It will awaken within them these things. So the free will is you can decide at any moment how you're going to engage yourself, if it'll be in connection with Krishna or not. That free will always remains.
What's the difference between the one who does take up and the one who doesn't take up?
Just one is, it's dormant. Means if they've done some agyata sukriti, it's just dormant. And others, they just are not interested. They're not interested in some improvement or elevation and all that. So because of the free will, they've been interested in these things, so Krishna puts them in contact. They see the Harinam, they want it, so they come in contact. They may not know what they're wanting. You know? Very few people know what they want. Like that. It means people who are successful, generally, they know what they want. Majority of people, they don't know what they want. You ask them, what do you want? Well, you know, I want to be happy. Well, what's your plan? What's your process? They don't know. You know, they've been promised happiness. You know, if they smoke this cigarette or drive this car, wear this clothes, or, you know, go to this bar, they'll be happy. So they're trying it, you know. It's like, but they themselves have no determination. Like that. So it's a matter of when there's some interest in, you know, something, some, you know, idea of something, you know, spiritual, then they'll come in contact with it. If they're sincere, then they'll come in contact with bona fide processes. If they're not, then depending upon the sincerity, they'll come in contact with the process.
Then there's garment in them. Then what's the distinction between these two sets of people who exercise their free will and who do not exercise it?
Means everyone's exercising your free will.
And in this particular context of evolution of spiritual life.
Because they're both exercising their free will, but one is wanting to improve themselves and one is very satisfied, you know, with whatever they are, you know.
But why does one choose jnana sukriti and one bhakti sukriti?
It's one's conditioning.
Conditioning based on...
No, bhakti sukriti is separate, but karma and jnana, that depends upon if the intelligence is... means, first of all, karma and jnana sukriti, that means piety. So first they have to be interested in either good works or some you know, intellectual development like that. That'll just be by conditioning. And that doesn't happen immediately. Like now, someone is, let's say, is interested in academics. So then they'll do some academics, you know, and then next life, then they may, if it develops nicely, they may do more academics until eventually they get up to be PhDs or, you know, emeritus, something very, and they may be very big in their field, and then they develop that, and then they come to some point where they see, well, that really didn't make them happy, you know? It means they worked hard, they've done this and that, but still, you know, in their family or this or that, it's not going well. So they may choose to go to some other to try that. Then they may think, well, actually, you know, getting involved with the family and people, and then they slowly start going in the direction of, you know, a social worker or, you know, some other kind of path. So it's a very gradual, you know, it's like in this life, how often does somebody change something? You know, they're into some sport, they'll do that for a while, and if as long as they're being happy, they're happy with it. But if something happens, they break their leg or, you know, some incident happens that changes their opinion, then they may change, but they haven't given up the desire for sport. They'll just change to a different sport. But then after a long, long time, you know, many, many lifetimes, then they'll start to figure out maybe sport doesn't make them happy. So then they'll try something else. You know, try, you know, intellectual pursuit or, you know, something in the... They'll try something different. But it takes a long time, because generally within a category, you'll be very happy to change around. You know, somebody gets tired of skiing, then they take up parachuting. They get tired of that, then they go for mountain climbing. It's not that they... So the principle of sport remains. You know? So they have to go through all these different things till they finally decide sports doesn't make me happy. So that's why we talk in millions of lifetimes. It's because in Gyan you have so many different aspects, so many different books, so many different elements of it that you could emphasize and get yourself into. You know, you can spend many lifetimes just trying to figure out how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. So, you know, but then after a while you get tired of that one, and then you go into, well, you know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? And that'll keep you busy for some lifetimes. And then you'll get into some other aspect of Gyan like that. So that'll keep you busy for a while. But after a while, you get tired of this Gyan. You know? So then you'll change around in this.
Is that when you change to Bhakti, or is Bhakti totally separate?
Bhakti is totally separate. When you finally get tired that all of this is, nothing's making you happy, and you wonder where to go from there, that's when the Bhakti starts. You turn to God and just, you know, what's, you know, can you, you know, help me here?
So is that the evolution that we've all been through, should we say?
Yeah. It means anybody who's taken up bhakti has already been through the whole gauntlet of karma and jnana and yoga. They've been in every species of life. They've done everything. Whatever is to be done, it's been done. And then there's been no satisfaction. Therefore, now the soul has by good fortune, just as a alternative, has turned to the possibility of God consciousness. Then in that has been cultivated until it deepens to the point where you can take up the association of devotees. You know, like you see, someone comes to the temple once and joins. Someone comes, has to come many times over many years, and then they become serious. So it's just a matter until it increases enough that the faith deepens, then you can take up that more serious association and practices. So that may be done in this life, it may have been done in previous lifetimes, like that. But there will be some preliminaries to it. It's natural. You know, if somebody just immediately takes it up, well, then we know that they've done more, they've come in contact previously. If it takes them some time now, then it may not be. They've done it now or a little bit before, like that. Does that make some sense?
Are we just saying basically everybody in this room has gone through the whole process? Sure, let's say we're interested in emotional service. We've gone through karma yoga, jnana yoga.
Yeah, means we've done all of it. Yeah. Means we've been Brahma, we've been the worm and stool, we've done it all, you know, like that. We've tried all avenues of happiness, like that. And we're not satisfied, you know, like that. Mercy is that the devotees go out and without our necessarily wanting it, they create a situation in which we will get that agyata sukriti. Like, mercy is going out and distributing books, doing harinam, performing festivals, distributing prasad, you know, preaching. These things are mercy. Because the persons didn't necessarily ask for it. But we create the situation. So that's what's special about the Samkirtan mission. Because the Samkirtan mission then creates that agyata sukriti. While in other ages, then they wait for people to come forward. It means the sadhus sit in the forest and you go to the forest. You know, they don't come looking for you. Rare occasions. We see sometimes Narad Muni will do. Someone's so far gone, then sometimes they'll come. Like Maharaj Puchina Barhishat. He was such an accomplished, fruit of worker. He had performed so many yajnas and this, and he had great faith that this was going to get him something. But, because he's killed all these animals, in the Vedic sacrifices, you kill the animal. There's no sin for having killed the animal, so you won't go to hell. But it doesn't mean that the process of that you've killed the animal this life, they'll kill you next life. That remains. You understand? That's the reaction. then on top of that, if it's sinful, then you get the sinful reaction of killing the animal. You go to hell, and then as many hairs on the animal's body, then you will be, you know, born and killed in those kind of situations. But otherwise, the direct thing is you've killed them for sacrifice. So in the next life, they'll be able to kill you for sacrifice. So that's there. So this has increased very greatly, and so he can see that this person's not going to get very far very quick. So then Narad Muni comes and preaches to him. So that's causeless mercy. Okay. Yes.
You know that in such a yoga, mystical process of mystical yoga is a way of achieving self-realization. And now, Kali Yuga is the means to improve your health. But how this shift of philosophy took place? It seems like externally the same process. You do nothing, you see, yama, pranayama, in the Sati Yuga, it leads to a spiritual result, whereas in Kali Yuga, it's not. And it's more, you look at this personal philosophy behind this. How does this change, and what kind of philosophy was behind the mythical yoga and Sati Yuga?
Means the point is that you're trying to attain to devotion to the Lord. Is that in Satya Yuga then they realize the Lord and they take up bhakti. Like that. You see examples in the Bhagavatam. The devotees would get married and then they would sit down and do meditation and yoga for, you know, 10,000 or 60,000 years. And then when they'd see the Lord, then they would surrender to Him, become His devotees, and then start practicing devotional service on that platform. So in other words, what we will call the Kanistha and Madhyam platforms, that they'll do through yoga. Then they'll just take off from, you know, very advanced levels, the higher levels of Madhyama or, you know, Uttama, like that, depending upon the situation. So they use yoga for nishkam karma to develop that, because you have means your first six stages of the Astanga yoga are nishkam karma yoga. So that takes you through the Kanistha and Madhyam platform, and the last two are for the liberated stage. Those who are liberated, they can perform those two, you know, dhyana and samadhi. Otherwise you can't. Jhana means 24 hours a day. It's not that there's just whenever you have time between breaks in the office. It's 24 hours. There's no movement, there's no eating, there's no sleeping, there's no drinking, you know, there's no breathing, there's nothing. There's only meditation. So that can only be performed by someone who's gone into the beyond conditioning. So therefore the Gita explains these two levels. Yoga Rurudha and Yoga Rudha and Yoga Rurukshu. So one is the first six. So the principle is that you have to go through these stages of purification, that you have to become, through knowledge and detachment, you have to give up, you have to come to the liberated platform. So that can be done through the process of karma, through the process, you know, like the big yagyas in Treta Yuga, through the yoga system, through the Pancharatrik system, or through the Sankirtan yagya. For doing the process of yoga, then you have to also look at its practicality. It needs time. Minimum, we hear of 10,000 years. And generally, maximum, we hear of 60,000. So in this age, one doesn't have that much time. You know, so therefore the system won't work as a system to elevate us. The yagyas, then you need immense wealth. You know, means we see that Yudhisthira to the Rajasuya, then he had already gone around and gotten so much wealth from everybody by going and defeating all the kings on the planet and them all paying tribute. But to do the yagya, that's not enough. So you can imagine 5,000 years ago, the wealth that they had, kings giving tribute, you know, a thousand of everything, you know. But that's not enough to perform this yajna. Like that. So therefore, Arjuna, he had gone north and brought so much gold and wealth from the north, from a previous yajna and everything. Because everything is all done in solid gold, and it's used once, thrown away. You know, the sacrifice is there. They did the sacrifice, and then when the sacrifice is over, they just walked away. They left all the gold there. It's given to the Brahmins, but the Brahmins, how much they can carry and what they'll use it for. So they just leave it there. So, therefore, that kind of wealth. So here's the emperor of the planet. He's doing that yajna. Right? It's not, you know, your, you know, guy living in the tin house, you know.
Joe Blow.
He's not doing it. So then in the Dwapara Yuga, in the Pancharatrik system, that means rigid standards of cleanliness and opulence, that one is worshipping the Lord all day. You know? Means we're doing, you know, here, how many devotees can sit down and be a full-time pujari and be satisfied with whatever comes from that? It means if you're a full-time pujari, you'll have a place where you can sleep, you'll have some clothes, you'll have something to eat. So if you did it your whole life, you would be taken care of your whole life. But how many are doing it? Right? We have 400 centers around the world, and most are crying out for looking for pujaris. So therefore, for most people, it's not a reality. They can't do it. They don't have faith in that it's going to be secure. You know, they don't have their material needs are greater than that. You know, they want their own house, their own this, their own that. So therefore, then this process won't be practical for them as a means of elevation. So therefore, then that leaves us with, in this age, then the chanting of the holy name. That is the practical process, because that can be done at any time, any place, no restriction. So then, by that, then one can always be in contact with the Supreme Lord. So then it becomes the best system. Though, it is naturally supported by the Pancharatrik system and the various, you know, elements of the Vedic culture that help us situate ourselves in goodness. So those are all combined together and used. But the life of it is the chanting of the holy name. Without that, we wouldn't be following Pancharatra. We wouldn't be able to follow the elements of the Vedic culture. It means, you know, it's just these elements of, like mentions here, austerity, cleanliness, truthfulness, charity, wouldn't be there in the nature of the living entity in Kali Yuga, like that. By chanting the holy name, one's purified, one's able to use those to help purify yourself. So that's the Nishkam Karma Yoga.
Nisati Yuga can achieve in some advanced level. The philosophy that you want to become the devotional service. And whereas now, in Kali Yuga, they try to improve themselves, but the philosophy at the topmost levels is merged into the big. So how this change of philosophy?
That's just because you have Patanjali establishing it. Before, they didn't follow Patanjali. See, the yoga system means all the various systems are there only for elevation to Krishna consciousness. The material world is only meant for elevation to Krishna consciousness. There is no other purpose to the material world. But because there are people who are happy to stay in the material world, therefore then they have a tendency to take those various systems that are meant for their different conditioned natures and come up with a different philosophy. You know? I mean, here you're talking about 4 million years, right? A cycle is 4,300,000 years, right? So then there's no... So it's natural that you'll have people come up with different purposes for yoga, you know, for the systems of nyaya, for systems of karma. It means karma is you take your activities that you do in your day-to-day life and do them according to the rules that Krishna has given with the proper understanding that we're not the body and doing it as a offering to Krishna. You combine that, that's called Nishkam Karma Yoga, and that will elevate you to the liberated platform. Right? But people then take this karma, no, is to enjoy in the heavenly planets. So enjoyment in the heavenly planets is the ultimate goal. So therefore the soul is eternal. So if you perform pious activities, you know, enough of them, then you'll always be enjoying. This life you'll enjoy, next life you'll enjoy, and since the soul is eternal, you'll eternally enjoy. You know, we understand you change bodies and there's creation, destruction, the universe, is that we understand, but you'll always be in an enjoying position. That's their idea. Of course, there is this slight problem of like King Riga. He had done everything pious, but he did one thing and he ended up as a lizard. So that karma Mimamsa doesn't talk about. You know, they just talk about you can just do and always, but which is true, means from whatever good you do, you will enjoy. But whatever bad you do, then you'll suffer. The two are separate. Pious and impious, that the pious doesn't cut the impious. It'll get rid of the reaction and not the desires and those kind of things. So they're two separate things. Like that. Though we tend to think, I'll cover the impious by a pious. You know, but it doesn't work like that. Like that. So that's an interesting thing. So they don't talk about that, because otherwise then their illusion or their desired goal would not be attained. And then if they give that up, who knows what they'll just take up sinful activity. So then better they stick to that. You know, it's better than nothing. That's why it's said, those who are following the Vedic culture, that's better than not following it. A person who's of two persons who are not Krishna conscious, one who's following Vedic culture is better situated than one not following, because all the elements of Krishna consciousness are actually in place. Shastras, you know, basing your life in a regulated way, it's all in place. Though their goal is wrong, so therefore their process is wrong, their understanding of who they are is wrong. But you adjust that and then the system works. Right? Because karma is used, jnana is used, yoga is used, all that's, it's all within Krishna consciousness. But it has its place. Does that make some sense? All it's done is people have taken that one place and made a philosophy out of it. You know, it's like, let's say, in a meal. You know, it's like one of the things in a meal is, let's say, a salad. But there are people who have made a philosophy about raw food. And you shouldn't eat cooked food, and you should only eat raw food. So you have people, they have a whole philosophy of just salads and uncooked and raw, and they base their whole life on that, right? But that's taking one thing and overdoing it. So it may be good for a specific health situation at the time, for their constitution at the particular time, but it's not a normal meal. But they've taken, so therefore, yoga in the modern thing, they've taken the one aspect of yoga and overemphasized it, or karma, they've overemphasized it. So then you get these different things. Does that make some sense? Is that it's overemphasized and overexpanded and it become complete in itself. You know, like your medicine, you have naturopathy. It's part of Ayurveda. So within Ayurveda, there's fasting and there's other things like this. But they've taken it and tried to make a complete system of medicine out of that one side. So then they do so many things, they get some results. Some people go to them and it cures them. Other people go to them, nothing happens. Because it's good for that situation of that one person at the time. And so they develop it around that. Because they're developing around themselves, so it works on them. But it's not broad. Ayurveda's meant to work on everybody. So one person fasts, another person, they're not allowed to fast. Because it won't be good for them. Like that. So if the person that needs to fast, he'll say, this is great. And the person who shouldn't fast, and they fast, then they'll get worse. And they'll say, yeah, this is nonsense. And then the people, well, you didn't fast quite properly. No, they don't know the science that it's not for them. You know? So therefore, one has to, they've overemphasized. They've taken it out of context and created a philosophy out of it. But the Vedas are only expressed in Krishna consciousness. But these six philosophers, they have taken from the Veda and processed it in their own way for their own purposes. And so then you get these different branches of knowledge. But otherwise, before, Vedic literature is only for becoming Krishna conscious. Therefore, we see in the Bhagavatam, the principle is Krishna conscious, though we see some people are doing it according to meditation, some are doing it according to deity worship, like you know, like this, Ambarish Maharaj. Some are doing it according to other systems, like that. So it's yagyas, Prithu Maharaj with yagyas, he's seeing the Lord. You know, the Prajapatis, they're doing through yoga, like that, and then Kali Yuga we see like this. So but the principle is Krishna consciousness. So it matches. There's not a. It's just which depending upon the situation, the nature of the people, you know, facilities, then one of them is useful. So in this age, then the holy name is the prominent, and the other four are part of it. Means to do meditation, you have to chant the holy names. Like Guru Maharaj became perfect through yoga, but he had to chant Om Namo Narayanaya. Right? He had to chant that. So that was there. So worship is there. You know, your chanting is there. Your worship is there. Like that. Then they generally will sit. They'll do yagyas. They'll do all these other things in the first six stages. And then when they can go into 24 hours meditation, then they give those things up, and then they don't bother with them anymore. So you have all four systems are in each one of them. It's just which is emphasized. Does that make some sense? Okay.
Maharaj, I there's a story about Moses getting lost in the desert for 40 years, and it was only supposed to take him 11 days, the trip that he made. Mm-hmm. Could you explain what happens to devotees? Sometimes they just get lost in whatever, you know, loss of their personality. So what is the advice there if that happens?
The main principle is material desire. It means this: God was taking care of those in the desert, but they wanted something else. So naturally, it's going to take a little longer before they're ready. You know, it means God was taking care of them. They didn't have to worry about eating; they just went out and picked off the ground. You know, the food. If they picked too much because of their greed, then when they sat down to eat, it would reduce down to what was exactly enough for them to satisfy them. And if they hadn't picked enough, it would increase. So they were perfectly taken care of. But they weren't satisfied. They wanted something else. So naturally it'll take a little longer for them to be ready. Faith has to be there. And that. So we see faith was lacking. That's a main element that's lacking we see in these pastimes. Faith is not so strong.
So that's something that has to be developed then.
Yeah, one has to practice in the association of devotees, then faith develops, then success is there. One has to have faith that this is what's going to make one happy. Krishna consciousness will make one happy. But since I'm, you know, a grihastha, have those needs, I do those things, but those are side things. Side doesn't mean they're neglected or done wrongly, but they're done for Krishna's pleasure. But if I sincerely think that material life or grihastha life or wealth or education or any of these things will really actually make me happy, then it'll take longer, because they can't make the soul happy. They can only make the gross and subtle body happy, because they're only gross and subtle. They're only activities dealing with the gross and subtle body. You know? So therefore you can't... So if we put our faith in them, it will slow our advancement down. But we don't have our faith in them. We know this won't make me satisfied, but because the mind thinks it will be, therefore I do those activities, but according to Krishna's direction, to please Krishna. So therefore then, the mind is satisfied because it's done those things, but the soul is satisfied because it knows it's done it for Krishna. And then with time, you can start to see the two, you know, after some years, and you start to see is actually the happiness has been the element of engaging in Krishna's service, not the thing itself. You know, but that takes time to see.
So what if you have like a personality problem or a block, you know, something that you think is really stopping in your devotional service? I remember Haripad once said, if you keep telling yourself you've got something, you know, there's a fault there or it's, you know, something, then you always keep it. So how do you get rid of that?
Well, the point is, are we that fault? So what if you have it? Is that like a dog is dirty and stinky and barks and growls at everything and passes urine on anything vertical? So is that a high qualification for Krishna consciousness? Are those great qualities? Those are laudable?
No.
So, but does it stop them from eating prasad? Does it?
No.
No. So then, therefore, who cares what the bad qualities are? You know what I'm saying? Is why you don't. If you identify with it, then you keep it. You don't identify with it, then it goes. Or if it doesn't go, it'll adjust. It'll be purified. You can't change your personality. You can't change your nature. You can purify it. You won't change it. You can have a nice dog or a bad dog, but there'll be a dog nonetheless. You won't get rid of their dogness. You know, so conditioned nature will be conditioned nature. That you can't change. There's always the idea, you have to change your personality or change your nature. There's no question of it being possible. Because what it is, it's what it is. But what you can do is purify it. Because there's no bad quality if it's pure. Oh, there, you know, this person is, you know, too frank, right? But children are very frank and everybody likes them. So the problem is they're frank but for their own purposes. So there's pride there. And so the frankness is not pure. So that's why you don't like it. But if it was pure frankness, you would think, yes, this is a very honest and open and direct person. Everyone would appreciate that. So it's a matter of purity. It's not a matter of what it is. You know? So we just see that's what the nature is that there, and just you engage it properly and leave it at that. And, you know, just it's not you. Move beyond it. It means you don't have to identify with it. You engage it, but you don't identify with it. Just like if you want to cook something, do you have to identify with the pot and spoon to get some result? You know, I am this pot and sit and think of the mood of the pot and, you know, and stuff like that and the spoon and, you know, get right into it, you know, some kind of, you know, preparation. No. You know the science of cooking, you just use it. So you know the science that, okay, this body and this subtle body has a nature. We just use those in Krishna's service.
So do we acknowledge that there will be things that we can't do? Probably things that we can't do in devotional service?
Yeah, can't do means if it's something like, you know, we can't, you know, if we're attacked by thieves, we can't go out there and, you know, take a big stick and beat them all up and tie them up and put them in the car and take them down to the police station. Yes, we can acknowledge that maybe we wouldn't be able to do that. So, whatever it may be, you know, we may not be the person who can go into there and work out all the accounts and everything like that, or, you know, going into the kitchen and cook, or, you know, whatever it is, we may be, by our conditioned nature, able to do some services and some services not. So but we see what is the nature and how to engage that. But that has to be looked at without, one has to be detached from it, so one can look at it realistically. If we think we are it, we're attached to it. Therefore, then we'll always, you know, how you say, you know, generally give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. You know, we're generally, how you say, you know, we have the, you know, that serious, down-to-earth, critical eye for, you know, working out how everybody else could be, you know, Krishna conscious and improve themselves and for ourselves, and we're very, you know, broad-minded and benevolent and very liberal, you know, to see that, you know, we give the space required for the individual expression. Like that. So if you can reverse that, then that's what works.
So you wouldn't think that Krishna is giving it to us. He's actually might give you an impediment or something for your own protection?
No, the impediments are ours. There's no impediment to being Krishna conscious. Like the Pandavas, the whole, except for, you know, first, you know, some chapters of, you know, a few thousand verses out of 100,000 verses, then aren't dealing with the Pandavas. But as soon as it comes to the Pandavas, there is trouble. There's impediment. There's no time, there's no impediment. A couple of, okay, maybe one or two chapters, okay. When the Rajasuya sacrifice is going on, there's no impediment. When, you know, when they've been invited back to Hastinapur to gain half the kingdom, there's no impediment at that time. You know, when they were living, you know, with their father and family in the forest for a short time, there was no impediment. So maybe it may have been, you know, a few years of their life, there was no impediments. But those, you know, are taken care of in one paragraph, or maybe a few paragraphs, or, you know, maybe Rajasuya is a big, so that's a full chapter. But other than that, there's only impediments. The father dies, they go back from the very beginning. Duryodhana that didn't like them, because Yudhishthira is the oldest, so he will sit on the throne, not Duryodhana. Bhima is the same age as him, you know, so then that's a problem. You know, if he is older, then okay, he's number two, but he and Bhima are the same age, and they're both physically strong. So from the beginning, he didn't like them. You know, way before they were sent to the house of Lak, he's always been trying to make tricks to kill Bhima, to somehow or another get rid of them. So there's no time in their life that weren't material impediments, but they can be Krishna conscious at all moments. So the thing is we have to not connect material piety or material religiousness with spiritual advancement. We can use material piety, material religious activities to help us advance, but the results of those not coming is not considered an impediment. Understand? This is the, we're conditioned to religion means a good life. This is what we're taught in materialistic circles. You're pious, you're nice, you'll live nice. You're not pious, and then, you know, one gentleman will, you know, how you say, make your life miserable. Like that. So you're taught that. So therefore, you should always be nice, because then everything will go nicely for you, and people want things to go nice for them, so therefore they're religious. But religion is, that's not what religion's for. It's not for creating a nice life. It's for going back to Godhead. So we've been very, very nice, and just because we don't have any money, maybe no one respects us, we don't have steady facility, you know, like this, you know, we may have problems with other people, interactions. This doesn't mean we can't be Krishna conscious. But if we connect the two, that I've done all the religious things, how come I'm not getting the material benefits? Then we will definitely have problem in Krishna consciousness. Because then we will see lack of material facilities as an impediment in Krishna consciousness. But they're different. Why are these stories there? Why is Mahabharata there? Why are all the difficulties for the residents of Vrindavan there? Why are those stories picked, not other stories? Because we are conditioned to think religion means I will live happily in prosperity. That's what we are turning to religion for. Otherwise, and if religion's not going to give that, why bother? We'll just go out and have a good time. Right? So then if we are here, I've been in this yatra for so long, where's my facility, where's my position, no one respects me. Are any of those spiritual? Having a house, is that a spiritual thing? The yatra gave you a house, or the yatra has acknowledged you as a senior person, or the yatra is, you know, financing your facilities or taking care of you in, you know, different situations. Or is that spiritual? No. So therefore, when devotees look at it, what have I got, you know, 20 years, 30 years in Krishna, what did I get from this? Then that means, then, are we performing Krishna conscious activities for religious material benefit? Is that why we're doing it? If we think about it, if we say this like this, worded like this, the answer will always be no. No, no, I've done it to please Krishna. Then why did you ask? Right? Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. No, yes, that's nice. That's a bad. No, but where is my dhanam, my sundarim, you know? You know? I've been chanting Hare Krishna 30 years. There's no dhanam, janam, and sundarim. Right? Like that. So, you know, where is it? So, but then that means miss the point of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means we're trying to give those up. They may be there, may not. That's according to your past karma. If you're supposed to have money, you'll have it. If you're not supposed to have it, you won't have it. It's just what you've done in the past. Krishna consciousness, we did not advertise, yes, take up Krishna consciousness. It'll fix all your past material bad piety. So in this life, you'll only have good pious results. Right? Have you ever seen that written anywhere? No. I mean, is there there's a sign out the front that says, you know, here it is, karma fix up center. Right? Right? No. We're saying, we're teaching you how to get out of this material world, despite ourselves. So therefore, we shouldn't put the two together. Right? In expectations. We should put the two together in the process. Means I have desires for house, money, this, that. So whatever money I do get, I'll use for Krishna. Whatever house I have, I'll use it for Krishna. Whatever family I'll have, I'll engage them in Krishna service. And that's what all that's that then is the proper use of the karma. But to expect from Krishna consciousness I'm going to get good karmic results, that's where we're misplacing the two. We may say, well, I want to do it for Krishna, but Krishna needs our wealth. It's his wealth anyway. Right? It's his wealth. Is that what's going to please him? We have to decide, our idea how to please him is really what's going to please him? Or what he says pleases him, us doing that is what will please him? So that's the difference between sakam bhakti and nishkam. Sakam is what I want, I do that for Krishna. Which is good, nice. But, you know, that's relying on your previous karma to engage that in Krishna's service. Nishkam is, I just engage in Krishna's service, the result is his, and whatever I have, I use it. But I'm not attached to the result. So when you're attached to the result, it's my result, my activity, my result, my money, my house, my family, but I am a pious devotee and I engage that in Krishna's service. That's called sakam. Nishkam is the house is Krishna's, my family members are Krishna's, my wealth is Krishna's, but I am the caretaker of them, so therefore I have to see that they're all engaged in Krishna's service. You see, it's the same wealth, same everything, but the consciousness is coming from a totally different side. One is, I am the doer and I'm doing it for Krishna. Aren't I a great guy? You know? Therefore I need dhanam, janam, and sundarim. People should appreciate. I've done so much for this yatra. You know, I built this temple. I collected $500,000 for this temple. I've heard all these things. I'm not making these up. I'm talking direct things I've heard devotees say. And so then that's called sakam. They did it. Oh, you collected the money. It was your ability that you collected. Nothing to do with Krishna, right? It means you're such a great guy that, you know, just money walks into your hands. No, it's Krishna's ability. Maybe by previous karma, that those activities are the ones you've been gifted with, but they're Krishna's abilities. Someone can collect money, someone can lead, someone can do kirtan, someone can do, you know, other things. These are Krishna's qualities, not our qualities. But by our previous activities, that is the qualities of Krishna that we've cultivated, so we've received those. Then to claim they're ours, that's capricious, that's improper. Right? Karma nyeva dikadaste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phalahetu bur masnava mate karma sto karmani. So we have a right to perform our duty, that's proper. But to say that the result is ours, or that we did it, or to not do your duties, that's wrong. Those three are wrong. So the obstacles are created by ourselves. It's our results. The people are nasty with this or this or that. It's our results of our karma. We have a personality, we have a mentality, we have an activity, or we have a situation that will create some disturbance. But it's not from Krishna. And in all those situations, you can be Krishna conscious. One can always gain in Krishna consciousness. There's nothing can get in the way of Krishna consciousness. Right? Yudhishthira, he's the emperor. He's the most pious person on the planet. There's not a better person around the planet, but he's the one that's out in the forest. And Duryodhana, who's the worst guy, is sitting on the throne. You know, so as far as material, you know, organization, it may not be the best, but as far as Yudhishthira's personal Krishna consciousness, it's the best. Kunti later, after they've, you know, established everything, they've been situated properly and everything like that, and Krishna's leaving for Dwarka, then Kunti says, now we have everything, we're emperors of the world and all that, but actually it's not as good as when we were in the forest and we were always thinking of you, because then we always had you. Now we have, you know, Dhanam, Janam and Sundarim. Yeah, great, nice. But when we didn't have it, we had you. So we would rather have you. So therefore, let all those difficulties, troubles and all that come again. That's in Kunti's prayers. So there is no obstacle. You know, if there's any obstacle, it's us. We identify with who we are, and so that's the obstacle. But we don't identify with who we are, then we just see what we have in conditioned nature and engage that in Krishna's service. Does that make some sense?
If you're attempting to purify something that you find is, like you said, an emotional need or a mental need or need for something material, you're trying to purify that by offering Krishna's pleasure. It seems you already need a high degree of purity to really be able to do that. Otherwise, you're simply satisfying that need, you know, in conjunction with the rest of your lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, no one said that you go from sakam to nishkam overnight. You know, because sakam means kanista and nishkam means madhyam, like that. So that means is the madhyam is a pure devotee. They don't need these things. They may be in the family situation, engage all that, because the conditioned nature remains and they're comfortable working with their conditioned nature. Right? When you're conditioned, it's easiest to work through the conditioned nature. So you'll prefer those activities of your conditioned nature, like that. But but they don't identify with it. But the kanista identifies with it and thinks those results are very important for themselves. So that's the problem. The problem is it's a simple thing. It's when you want, it goes away. When you don't want, you have it. That's when you want, it goes away, and when you don't want, it comes. Right?
When you want it to go away, it'll go away.
No. It's the opposite. Yeah. You have, we can give a couple of examples. Okay. The you have the child. You're trying to get it to do this, that. They just go away. They're independent. Just do whatever they like. You ignore them, and okay, you stay here. We're going. And they come. Right? The man is after the girl. The girl's moving away. He says, okay, forget it. Turns around. And immediately the girl's there. And then as soon as he turns his attention, it goes away again. You know? You can even watch it in the animals. They do the same thing. You know? The pigeon comes down, you know, struts around, cuts the profile. Female pigeon just is, you know, pecking at this and that as if the guy doesn't even exist. Right? Well, this and that. You know? And the more he insists, the more they just kind of go and maybe even fly off to a different place, you know, and then he's following after. But if he gives up and moves away, then she'll come. Like that. So Prabhupada even commented on that. He was watching that. He says, in all species of life, he was laughing, in all species of life, the females play hard to get. So that's the principle. It's when you want, it goes away. When you don't want, it comes. So that's why you perform your duty to the best of your ability, and whatever comes by that, then you're satisfied with that. Otherwise, you try for something, you don't get. Or even you get it, you don't have it for long. like that. So in the beginning, main point is to engage it in Krishna's service. Whether you think it's yours to engage or it's Krishna's to engage, engagement in Krishna's service, that's what you're trying to get to. That's the essence. If that's performed, it will be purified and you will move to the next platform anyway. That's what Prabhupada says, it's automatic. Automatic doesn't mean you do nothing. But if you do the one thing, it automatically happens. You know, it's like if you put the water in the pot and the pot on the fire and turn on the fire, automatically it will boil. But if you don't put the pot on the fire and turn on the fire, it won't boil. So you have to do the activity, but automatically the result will come. So if we're attached, but we engage in Krishna's service, then with time, automatically we'll become detached and able to engage in this Krishna's service. And then the next stage is we'll be liberated. Is that okay? Yeah. But we have to understand the principle and then see where we're at and then just see that we're engaged, you know. Even if it's on the lower level, it doesn't matter. That's where we are. So we should acknowledge it and just didn't start. And then by starting, we'll naturally come to the next platform. So that's why it takes... We can't identify with our conditioned nature. The more we identify, the more we're attached to it. And, you know, what's the problem with it? But if we're not attached to it, then we understand that's the need and then we just engage it. Means you take those things that you want to do, but according to the rules and regulations, engage it for Krishna. So both is done. That's the meaning of sakam. You're doing what you want to do for your own purposes. But that activity can be done for Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says it should be done like this. So instead of doing it according to our own speculative ways how to do it, we do it how Krishna says it should be done. So then we do it according to that offer to Krishna. And then Krishna will be pleased because the endeavor has been that you've tried to do it how he likes it, though you're doing it for your own purpose. Like you're cooking, okay, you want to cook. But you want to cook for yourself and that's why you're cooking. But Krishna says, you know, when you cook, you know, everything should be offered to him, it should be pure, you know, it should be vegetarian, all these. So then you follow those. You follow the standards of kitchen cleanliness. And, you know, you don't eat things while you're cooking and all that. And then at the end you offer it to Krishna. Your purpose was to eat. But by doing that, Krishna is pleased that you've done that according to his direction. You know? And so just doing it according to his direction is your desire to please him. Though the eating part was for yourself. You know? But then slowly, slowly come to the point is that you're doing that because that pleases Krishna. You know, Krishna likes to eat and Krishna likes, you know, the offering that he's offered. It's not what's there, it's the mood in which it's done. So then it's being cooked to please Krishna. So that'll just come with time. So the important thing is doing it, means the essence is doing it to please Krishna. You offer it to Krishna. Whatever the situation is. But better than that, but that's not very dynamic, you know, because what's being offered may not be very offerable. But, you know, but if you do it so it is offerable, though you've chosen the things to offer to Krishna according to what you want, right? You want a house, so therefore you choose a house that you can also use for Krishna. You know, like that. You want a car, so but whatever it is, you get it. And so, you know, you also drive to the temple sometimes and, you know, go to the Harinam or like this. You know, you want money, so you get money, but you use some for Krishna's service. Like that. So then, you've chosen those things. But then you see, well, how does Krishna want your house to be organized? How does he want you to deal in driving your car. You know, you're supposed to, you know, lean your head out the window and curse at everybody going by because, you know, they didn't do what pleased you? Or is it better, you know, that you drive your car according to, you know, local customs and behavior? And then people will think that, you know, the Hare Krishnas aren't, you know, they're, you know, pretty normal. You know, so then, you know, that would be, okay, so Krishna would rather have us, you know, not break the rules, drive properly, and, you know, behave normally. So then we're doing that for Krishna, you know, and our money. So then we're making it according to, you know, proper ways, and we're using it in proper ways, you know, for the family, and we're not using it for sinful activities, and things like that. So in that way, then there's some restriction, and there's in consideration with Krishna's direction. So that is dynamic. That will bring us, that will make us advance quickly. Like that. You know, well, if we do any old nonsense we want and then offer it to Krishna, then at least we've offered it. So that's better than nothing. But it's not very dynamic. But when we start following the rules, then it becomes dynamic. Krishna consciousness becomes dynamic at Bhajana Kriya. Because then it means you're serious. That's when Krishna takes it, you're serious about Krishna consciousness. In Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha, those first two stages, it's good, it's nice. Krishna's happy, but when you come to the third stage, Bhajana Kriya, then he knows you're serious. You really want to go back to Godhead. So you're adjusting your life to follow whatever rules and regulations need to be done to make it dynamic. Like that. So that's the next stage. Then the third stage is that those activities you're doing, because those are what you can, your conditioned nature can do, so you do those for Krishna. But you're not doing them for yourself. You know? So that's the next stage. So like that, there's a natural progression.
Yeah. I think some of the hang-ups I personally had when I first came to practicing Krishna, first started practicing Krishna consciousness, was the fact that I felt peer group pressure, where I felt that I had to do things a particular way. And in the end, I was actually performing things mechanically because I thought that was the right thing to do, because then I would be accepted. But there was no real... I wasn't doing it because I thought it would please the Lord. I was doing it because I thought it would look all right in the eyes of the devotees. And then that mental conflict comes where you just get fried.
Yeah, no, that's part. But if you can also look at it from another angle, is pleasing the devotees is pleasing the Lord.
Mm.
So then it's not a bad thing. Even though it's mechanical, that's the meaning of it. It's just like, let's say you want to learn something. You want to, whatever it is. Anything you take. Mm-hmm. You want to learn it. The first stage of it is purely mechanical. Mm-hmm. You know, the kid is learning A, and they do that page after page. It's mechanical. It's absolutely no use, right? You can hand that three pages of A's to somebody, and then they'll, wow, what a literary, you know, genius. You know, you won't get that. It's just mechanical stuff. But by doing that, then you get to the stage where it's not mechanical. See, when something's new, it's always mechanical. You first ride a bicycle, you're not thinking about anything except for, you know, how to stay on that bicycle and not kill yourself. So it's not, and no one will say, wow, what a great bicycle rider. You know, go out and this guy knew or what. You know, but when you practice, then after a while you can ride the bicycle, and then you can be thinking of other things and looking at what's around you and you know, surviving. So it's anyway, meaning the first stage is going to be mechanical. That's the process. Is just once it's mechanical in the beginning, and then when it becomes habit, that's then when your work starts. Means the mechanics of Krishna consciousness are so that you have a field in which to work. You know, just like if you want to do anything, you want to drive a car, then you're going to have to go through practice, and there'll be mechanics of it. But the thing is not just to drive a car. That wasn't the purpose. The purpose is to drive a car to go here, there, and so many places. You want to get somewhere, and the car is the medium. So the mechanics of Krishna consciousness, those are a medium through which you can serve Krishna. So the thing itself isn't what's important. But it's the mechanics of Krishna consciousness are the best activities to use in Krishna consciousness. So it's what you're thinking when doing them. But when you first start, you may not be really thinking of Krishna or Krishna conscious. You're just doing them because they have to be done.
I think it's more in terms of, like, say, for example, Master Sharon is talking about property. I think is that what you're talking about? You mentioned property. It's like, say, when we first came, okay, we sold our house that was a house A, and we downgraded the house because, you know, this was the right thing to do to live simply, but the desire is still there to have a nice house. And so sort of like it's sort of that sort of mentality that I had.
Well, you have to see what is the principle is simplicity. And then you have to apply that to the individual. So if for one individual facilities come very easily, but whatever they come and they're comfortable at, they engage in that, but in a simple way. You know? Like that. It's like, is that generally I've seen in your more aristocratic houses, the house is more simple than in an average person's house. The house itself, it's a big house, but there's very few things in the house. It's only just what needs to be there and not one thing more. Well, in more common people, there's houses cluttered with stuff. They don't need it, but they're attached to it. But the others, because the piety of having more, they have a tendency to be more detached. So they see this room only needs this much stuff, and that's all. And what they don't need, they'll do something with it. So simplicity means that your life is not complicated. If money comes easy for you, you have the facilities, you're not caught up in those facilities, and you do. You know? And so but you have to see what comes. Now, if it doesn't come easily and you over-endeavor for that, that's not simplicity. But if wealth comes and you can live like that and it doesn't take up more of your time that you can't be Krishna conscious, then that's fine. But if it takes up too much time and too much energy, then maybe it's not worthwhile. You know, so you have to, it's very much individual, you have to balance. Because, you know, means in the beginning you naturally will be comfortable living in a lifestyle that you can identify with. But, you know, all elements that are useless for Krishna consciousness have to be rejected. And then those that are useful for Krishna consciousness, those are kept. You know, so you may have a good facilities and lifestyle, but if some of those are maya, you know, like you have a fabulous wine cellar, you know, full of all the best, you know, wines that their, you know, money can buy, that may be considered maya. So you might get rid of that, you know. So, but point is you like fine things. So whatever you have in your house will be good. But you don't keep more than what you need. If you don't need it, you don't keep it. But what you have, it's good. So then that principle of your lifestyle remains, but you've simplified and you've gotten rid of what's useless. You've kept only what's useful in your Krishna consciousness. Plus your Krishna, you're going to add some things. You're going to add an altar to your house. You're going to change the way you use your kitchen. You know, you're going to change the standards of purity in the house. You know? And so you'll adjust those. So then what's unfavorable is gotten rid of. What's favorable is established. So that's simplicity doesn't necessarily mean poverty. But it doesn't mean that you endeavor for what's beyond. It means everyone goes to work, let's say, 8 hours a day. But one person, 8 hours a day, is just making ends meet, and another person is making billions of dollars. You know? So therefore, their degrees of what is simple for them may be different. Like that. But one doesn't over. If it takes too much energy, too much time, too much anxiety, then what's the use? If you have such a big place and so opulent that you're always worried that thieves are going to come and steal everything, and you have to have so many different social things to maintain that status, and you may find it's not useful. So then you may adjust. But if in that situation you're being Krishna consciousness, and you know, then it's not a problem. Like that. But one should ultimately understand that the idea that nice material facilities will make me happy, that ultimately must be given up, because they never do. And the time of death, you can't take it with you anyway. You know, so therefore, the security that the material facilities give, you know, aren't real. There is no security in material. So the only security is Krishna and Krishna consciousness and the relationships with devotees. That's security. Nothing else is security. So you have to balance that. So each individual has to do that. You know? That has to be done. Yeah, Yudhishthira, we don't criticize him. Wow, who's this guy I think he is? Got, you know, he's emperor of the world, has so much money, and he's at matched his position. And for him, it's not an over-endeavor. He can go out there and manage the world as easy as we can, you know, manage our household. Probably even easier. You know? So it depends upon what for you is simple. If you know how to manage so much stuff, then you do it. It's not a problem, because for you that's simple. The point is simple means we're not over-endeavoring for things we don't require. And therefore we have time for Krishna consciousness. Right? If we can get by on 8 hours a day working, why we work 12? In fact, we can get by on 2, why we work. There's one devotee I know of in Bombay. He was doing stocks. He had gone to school and learned, you know, the whole, I don't know what degree they do, but to learn the whole science of the stock market, you know, the modern economics and all that. And he was good at it. And then he took up stocks and all that, and he was working on the speculative side. You know, that makes fast money, a lot of money and fast. So he was doing that, and he was very good at it, and he was becoming very wealthy. But, you know, he wasn't married or anything like that. He had just finished school. Then he came in contact with Krishna consciousness and was, you know, impressed with it and moved into the temple. And I think for about 2 years he lived in the temple as a brahmachari. Then he decided, you know, he wanted to get married. And so then, you know, some marriage was organized. And, you know, for a living, then he went back to the stock market. But he didn't do speculative. He went into just, you know, your standard stuff of, I don't know what it's called, but it's just some standard area. It's not speculative. And he just does that. But he was really worried that he was really attached to, you know, the life in the temple. You know, the good morning program and studying and reading and association of devotees. So he was discussing that with Maharaj. And Maharaj said, okay, then do this. How much time you spend at work, you spend that much time in the temple. So then he comes to the temple every day, spends 5 hours, and he spends 5 hours at work. And in that 5 hours, then he makes, you know, as much or more than anyone. He has 2,000 people working under him. It's his business, and 2,000 people work for him. So as an individual, when I last talked to him, he was the 7th largest broker in India. And the only ones bigger than him are, you know, big companies, not individual, private. And he just does that in 5 hours, no problem. And when he's at the temple, he's not always thinking about his stocks and all that. He's chanting and reading, and he stays until he comes at Darshanartik and stays through till lunch. After lunch, he goes to work. Then after work, then he comes home and he just does, you know, with the family and the Krishna consciousness and, you know, whatever they do in the family. And that's it. So in 5 hours a day, he makes more money than other people make, you know, in all day. So, but that's according to his ability and nature. So he does it, you know. And I'm sure in time he'll be able to put in less time. You know, a guy like Bill Gates comes to work, you know, about an hour and a half, 2 hours a day. And he makes $30 million. You know. So it's just it's not the amount of time you put in. But the point is you work what is your ability. And, you know, don't work more than this much. Like that. You know, no more than a third of your day should go into economic development. You know, like that. So then you just see where that situates you. Yeah. Yeah. I think it should be last question.
Yeah. equally like in Tamil chant and Hare Krishna. And I've also heard that such jungle chanting leads to a crazy mind.
I don't know. I haven't heard about leads to crazy mind. It just means that if you're not careful about the chanting, then you know you won't get properly the results. Because the point is the mantra is Krishna. So if you're not chanting properly, then you're not really getting that association. So it's the association with Krishna that creates our advancement. So if you don't chant nicely, then naturally advancement won't be as good like that. You know, problem comes is if we're not advancing nicely, then our material desires will remain. That will make us crazy. You know, the need for material desires is what drives us nuts. Like that. So if we're not proper, or more than that, we'll be criticizing devotees. Like that. That will be the worst thing to drive us crazy. Because that will create then the material desires in the heart. And then those desires will drive us nuts. Like that. So if we, you know, we should see that we're chanting properly, chanting clearly. But most important is how we associate with devotees. If we're able to associate properly with devotees without being, you know, improper in our behavior, that will guarantee our quickest advancement. Like that. It means you take the 10 offenses and reverse them. That's what will make your advancement. Like that. You know, associating with devotees properly, you know, accepting the order of the spiritual master, you know, understanding that the process of Krishna consciousness is real. It's not, something that just gives material benefit, you know, giving up the attachments. These things then will make us advance quick. That's why these are considered offensive, because they stop us from advancing. Is that okay?
Just that point there, if you're meditating, if you're thinking about your material life, or you're just in life while you're chanting, is that watering your material desires or watering?
It can. It means both will be going on. Where our chanting is going on, but then those things are going on also. You know, so both are happening. So it's best. That's why you try to connect what you're doing in your life to Krishna. Then at least it will have some, you know, in some ways been dovetailed. So then even thinking about all your activities, if they're connected to Krishna, then it is in that way kind of service. It's not ideal, but still it's a step in the right direction. Like that. Okay.
Ideally, are you supposed to be just hearing the mantra?
That's ideal. If you can focus on hearing the mantra and understanding that this is Krishna, then that's the best. You know, and if the mind is distracted by thinking of service, that's, you know, it's okay. But if it's thinking of sense gratification, that's to be avoided. That's pretty useless. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainitai Gaura Plenarandi.